Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Chat with the Labs conference call. Today's call is being recorded. You should have received charts for today's conference. If you did not receive them, please email Linda Spina at lspina, that's L-S-P-I-N-A, at us.ibm.com. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over. We'll go live. Please stand by.
I've never done 4GL. I haven't done any New Era. Anybody else still doing New Era? Thank you. Hal, you're still doing New Era? I'm sorry, and you're still smiling. Yes. All right. But I've been doing this a long time, and I've tried to specialize in the engine internals. And so there's a lot of things I can answer on the engine side. So feel free to jump in and ask questions. The website, don't forget to visit the website, markscranton.com. A lot of good information out there. And the very bottom, my activity alone has been about 10 countries, 30 cities, doing infobons, user meetings, whatever it might be, and about 40 U.S. cities this year. That's just me. Jacques Roy, Christine Normile, Jerry Cassie, a lot of the team have been doing visits as well. So the point is, if your management asks, is IBM busy with IDS? We have a lot of road miles this year on just IDS talking. I can't go and talk about much of anything else. So a lot of activity that way. Let me go back one slide, go back to slide two. The CPC, the Conference Planning Council, whatever it's called, Tammy had asked me to announce the IDUG IIUG conference, which is set for May 7th through the 11th in Tampa. In-depth informal educational seminars. A lot of us will be there. John Miller will be there. I'll be there. Jonathan Leffler. A lot of powerful people, technical people will be there. A lot of networking, products, and services. If you can go to the IIUG website, IIUG.org, look around, look under CONF for conference, and you'll see the conference is taking place in May. So please sign up. It's a great conference. We did it this past year in Denver and worked out really well. So make sure you keep that on your calendar. Going forward to slide number four, I am available for all of these things. User groups, client visits, technical roundtables, and the last year has spent a lot of time doing management convincing. In other words, you know, the management wants to see what the roadmap is. The management wants to really know what's going on. So I don't want to spend too much time on the introductory stuff, but make sure that you keep me in mind. And if I can't do it, there's other people on the team that can do this, the same type of thing as well. So make sure you keep us in mind for continuing to raise the informant's visibility. We have done so much work this year and so many customer visits. We have a hard time believing that everybody doesn't know what the true story is now. Well, the fact is, we still don't. We still are trying to get some momentum. We're doing very well internally, by the way. We're doing very well at double-digit growth this year with the product. So keep us in mind when you need help in those ways. I'm going to go a little bit fast through the introductory stuff. The website, make sure you visit the website. A lot of good information. One thing I've been trying to put out there on the website, by the way, which is also a lab thing, is I've got a lot of the links for example, Jacques Roy's white papers, his developer works papers. Jacques has done a paper comparing IDS to Oracle. I don't know if it's been posted or published yet, but it's one that's being worked on. There's a lot of developer works papers that are out there, so please take advantage of them. You can pull them down for free, and make sure you hit the developer works site. And if you can't find it, go here, hit the Jacques Roy link, you'll see the rest. Okay, one more announcement, then we'll get into the real topic. The 10 Cities Tour. Little bit of a play on words, the IDS 10.0 Cities Tour. We're in the very initial planning phases, and we're trying to pick 10 cities to do IDS 10. I was talking to Lester earlier, and we're trying to pick some cities we think that we might not have done in a while. Okay, some of the cities we haven't visited. So keep your eyes open for this. We want to do 10 cities at least this year, do heavy-duty technical days, a half a day for this, a half a day for that. I'm trying to work some educational discounts, that type of thing. So just keep your eyes open for the 10 Cities Tour that will happen in 2006. Okay, that was a quick introduction. Normally I take more time, but we're a little limited for time. Let's go ahead and get into the topic. Indexing and fragmentation strategies. Again, when I agreed to do this, I didn't even think that I'd only have an hour. When I agreed to do this, as Tom will tell you by his laugh, that I would love to have more time on this. And so what I want to make sure you understand is a couple of things. I had to assume some knowledge. I had to assume some foundational knowledge. If you've never touched fragmentation before, some of this is going to seem relatively new. So assuming that knowledge, I'm able to go into some detail without having to go into the full depth. Now, being an educator at heart, it's hard for me to cover an important topic like that without diving really deep. So it's going to be tough to get through the material, but the other thing is hopefully it'll give you enough impetus to go forward and find out more. How many have seen the IDS Info Center, the Information Center? Is that cool or what? I mean, I find it very helpful. Finally, we've got something all consolidated. It's web-based. It's Googleable, right? Why did I bring that up? Because more curiosity you have about fragmentation and the topics I'm going to talk about today, you've got a lot of good resources there on the IDS Info Center. There's always classes, too, on this type of thing from an educational point of view. So, with that said, as I mentioned, this could take days to cover exhaustively. But from large to medium sites, or even from medium to large sites, this is critical for top-notch IDS performance. Fragmentation, PDQ, and I'm not going into the PDQ stuff today. I'm going into fragmentation with almost the assumption that PDQ is implied, by the way. And again, there's a can of worms that I can't get into just due to time. But again, critical for a lot of sites. Fragmentation has been out for a long time. If you're newer to IDS, by the way, which some of you might be, fragmentation's been out since what, the early 90s? I mean, it's been around a long time. To be honest with you, I don't think we did a very good job educating or explaining it. I really don't. I think if we would have done better, we would have done better. Okay, we would have done better in the marketplace. A strong IDS foundational knowledge is important, by the way. So, with that said, in the next hour, I'm going to cover some of the fundamentals of indexing and fragmentation. I'm going to handle the topic somewhat separately. When I talk about fragmentation, I'm not going to be talking about table fragmentation or index fragmentation necessarily. I'm going to talk about both, okay? At the very bottom of your page, any reference to a fragment or a structure could be a table, could be an index, whatever it might be. I tend to call things structures now, as opposed to a table or opposed to an index. So, I will also cover, a little in the middle and towards the end, some of the significant changes that took place in 9.4 and 10 that really affect this topic, really affect fragmentation and indexing. And again, bear with me because I was really struggling last night when I finally wrote my presentation that I couldn't... You think I'm kidding. I really struggled with what do I put in an hour? Well, I mean... Rule says 20 slides in an hour, 3 minutes a slide, whatever. Well, we don't have 20 slides, by the way. We've got a few more than that. So bear with me. A little bit of review on fragmentation. When we first started pitching fragmentation, it was really, are you doing OLTP or are you doing data warehousing? Towards the end of the presentation, I'm going to talk about how I'm seeing somewhat of a hybrid environment in a lot of cases where you don't see that distinct separation between the two. But from the back in the day or even for the people that are just doing OLTP, a lot of us know what OLTP is. High volume, short transactions, relatively few rows returned. Now, see, I believe that's changing a lot. It used to be you return a few rows. Some of your OLTP queries, you're still calling OLTP queries, are returning lots and lots of rows. There's a lot of applications and queries that are starting to look like something else, not OLTP or not data warehousing. Be real careful, too, and I think I mentioned this in the presentation. If you've got an OLTP environment that traditionally didn't chew on many sequential scans because there weren't many rows to return, and now you see different behavior, that's okay. Okay, I'm from the school where sequential scans are not necessarily taboo. Every place I visit, well, I think I've got a lot of sequential scans. Okay, how many rows are you returning? Most of them. So that's okay. Okay, it's really okay. The point is, the nature of the industry, you guys know better than I do, is changing. The number of rows you can return now, and I'll shorten this little piece up, is so much different than what it was before because of an abundance of resources, disk, horsepower, whatever it might be. So be open-minded when you're analyzing the OLTP queries, since you guys have all that free time to look at set explains, right? When you're analyzing the OLTP queries or you're expecting to see a nested loop, you might see a dynamic hash, okay? So be careful with that. For this environment on the right, and this is where I wish I could dive, but here we'll stay a little high level. We say fragment the data by round robin or by expression. All right, there's an assumed knowledge level. Now, again, those are the two schemes for fragmenting your data. If you're using XPS, there's another one which is called hybrid, or even hash for that matter. But round robin or expression we'll talk about a little bit, but I'm not going to explain the fundamental pieces of those two. And again, I apologize if you don't have that foundation. There's just no time. For large tables, receive a large percentage of transaction activity, fragment the indexes using an expression-based fragmentation strategy. Again, we're very high level now. People ask, should I fragment the data and the indexes? What's the answer there? Who knows? I don't know. I mean, I'll literally say, I don't know because I don't know your site. A lot of people do both. A lot of people have been fragmenting indexes for a long time. What did we do in 9.2 that changes the default behavior of indexes? I'm not trying to give it away. What did we do in 9.2? We detached them, yeah. Now, the first question that came to me when in my travels is, well, so detached indexes are always best. I said, well, no, not necessarily, but we saw a lot of situations where that was the case. So what I'm trying to say is be really careful, especially when you're looking at fragmentation, not to say that this client is doing it this way, so I need to follow their lead, because each of your sites are usually different enough or unique enough that that wouldn't be the case. The thing about fragmentation and the heavy-duty fragmentation, and I'll explain that in just a minute, is it does take a lot of homework. It does take a lot of background. It does take a lot of knowledge. So I'll say later in the slides presentation, don't tread into it lightly. For OLTP, again, a lot of people lean towards fragmenting their indexes because a lot of the data is accessed via an index. You might fragment your table data as well. There probably was a time where you'd fragment your indexes, but the table was relatively small, so who cared? Now the tables are getting larger. How many have a billion rows in a table? Okay. Dana has a billion rows, more than a billion? Okay. Dana Carney says he's got 2 point whatever billion. John Miller raised his hand too, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, I was at a client site the other day, and I said, well, you know, what's your largest table just by rows? And they said, well, the largest one is about 400,000. And I mean, really, that's a large for that client where Dana's looking at 2 billion. I've got 3 or 4 clients right now that have 2 billion rows in a table. Years ago, you didn't have that, as you know better than I do. So the point is, the point I'm trying to make is have an open mind. When you're looking at your environment, and the fragmentation choices is going to be a big function of the environment, okay? As it always has been, the environment is changing, though. For data warehousing, decision support is a lot of times what people call it. I've always called it data warehousing. Low volume of long-running queries. I remember teaching class back in Brisbane, California, many, many years ago, probably in 96. And a guy came to class and he said, my boss will think this class was worth the price of admission if we can get this 5-day query down to 3 days, okay, with fragmentation. You know, those are the days when you had those types of queries. Hopefully you don't have them anymore. I don't know. I shouldn't ask. I see a few head nods. Queries access most of the rows in the table. Again, sequential scans, dynamic hash, you're going to see this a lot. You may or may not see indexes. Be real careful, by the way. I still bump into people that say, well, in data warehousing, there's no indexes. What's the point? Do you think that's true? It can be. Maybe, yeah, maybe not. Okay. I still get people that believe that is how the data warehousing environment is supposed to look. That's not true at all. So it can be true for some people, not true for others. Preferred access method, sequential scan. Preferred join method is hash join. If you are not familiar with hash join, nested loop join, for example, dig into the Info Center, dig into some of the white papers. Neither one of those join algorithms, I think, are complex. But the nature of the nested loop, the nature of the hash join, understanding what they really do, especially a hash join, is really important for performance and also very important for your configuration of your engine. So keep that in mind, a little bit of a side topic. In data warehousing, we're trying to achieve a number of things. One thing that's pretty common, I should say, well, you got to be careful, is fragment elimination. We might want to eliminate fragments. Imagine you've got all the states in the United States, excuse me, and you've got California customers and Indiana customers. Well, the odds are pretty good that there's more customers in California than Indiana, all things equal. If I'm servicing an Indiana client, I'm trying to go out and get the Indiana records, I don't need to read through 2 billion rows of California customers. Okay, that's really fragment elimination. So I'll be explaining part of that over time. And if we can do parallel scans, we'd like to do parallel scans. Now, you'll see the word scan a lot in these slides. A couple of them I've highlighted and caveated that it's not just parallel scans or reading the data that can be done in parallel. Inserts, updates, deletes, those types of things can also be done, which we'll talk about in just a bit. So don't get into the mode where fragmentation is always just for scanning data. It just seems to be what turns up in the slides a lot. So keep that in mind. Okay, some tips real quick before I forget. Fragmentation, when you start fragmenting your table, you're going to want to look closely at sysfragments, okay, versus, say, sysindexes. You're going to see a lot of entries in sysfragments. I was on site a couple of years ago, and my buddy Charlie was writing some scripts to do this and monitor that and whatever. And I assumed that he knew about sysfragments. So you see where I'm going with this. He did not. He came in one day and said, man, there is just a wealth of knowledge in sysfragments. I said, oh, yeah, there is. There's a lot. When you start fragmenting your data, you're going to see entries in sysfragments. Now, be real careful. You end up fragmenting your data in a general sense, in a specific sense. It doesn't matter when you end up with detached indexes. All right? To us, a detached index is a fragment. The one thing I meant to put in the presentation and I forgot is you're going to see as you move from 7 to 9, for example, 7 to 9, 2, 9, 3, 9, 4, hopefully 7 to 9, 4, you're going to see more references to the word fragment. Fragment gets used a lot. Whether or not you're fragmenting your data, you're still going to see references to the word fragment. In an on-check PT, for example, all right, you're going to see references to the word fragment. So keep your mind open on that to remember that the terminology, and I've got a slide coming up that talks about it even more, the terminology can be somewhat overlapping or vague at times. Bottom two bullets are really important. Round robin is terribly easy to implement, all right? But there's not a whole lot of benefit, with the exception of if you're going to scan all of your data in parallel or your indexes in parallel, although you can't round robin your indexes explicitly, never mind. There's not a lot of benefits, okay? It used to be, by the way, and you may have some old tuning guides. They used to say, well, if you're going to want to load your data fast, you might want to consider robbing performance by fragmenting it by round robin. You might get better performance for the load. That's way old school, folks. That's way old school. If you're going to load data, what should you, and you need to have a fast performing load, folks, what should you be using? The crowd said in four part HPL, okay, the high performance loader. I'll save that for later. But the point is, round robin in some cases are applicable. The one thing with round robin you cannot do is what? Anyone? Thank you very much, Curtis. Fragment elimination. You cannot do fragment elimination with round robin. I'm not saying that's bad. But again, if that's what you want, that's okay. Be real careful on the next bullet. Expression-based fragmentation is much more difficult, but the benefits can be superb. All right? I did a search for some clip art on superb, couldn't find anything. So anyway, I'm serious. That's why I was up till 1:30 doing this. I have seen clients that they say expression-based is way too difficult, not to mention you got to know a lot about your data, for example, and so they fall back to round robin. And I've never thought about a good analogy for this, but that just doesn't make sense. Okay, it's not a good choice. So I encourage you not to take the easy path, but to really consider expression-based if you have that need of fragmentation. Factor fiction, fragmentation factor fiction. Question number one, I'm on slide 16 for those of you that aren't here. True or false, the primary consideration when you should fragment a table is when it reaches X number of rows. How many think that's false? About half the crowd or so. How many think that's true? Okay, well, nobody raised a hand. You can tell by the way I'm saying it, right? The reason I put this in a slide and made such a big deal about it is I get this question all the time. I should say I get it less than I used to, but there were a number of years that I got this question. Well, I've got a billion rows. Should I consider fragmenting? What's my answer? I don't know. I know nothing about your queries. I know nothing about your data, and we'll talk about that coming up. So the answer is this. Well, the table size obviously is important. The first two considerations must be the query behavior. All right, and I wrestled for a word on that. The nature of the query, the behavior. Are they returning lots of rows, a few rows? Do they run once a day? Do they run twice a month? Is it one of those critical month-end type operations that has to be done regardless, that type of thing? Are the queries fixed or ad hoc? Okay. The second one might look a little funny. The knowledge of the data, is it well-known or unknown? Well, having unknown knowledge of the data is still knowing about, in other words, we don't know. It changes so much. We don't have data that is static enough to be able to really say this is what we want to do. And there are environments like that where you really don't know the nature of the data well enough because it changes so much, you might consider reading everything up in parallel and fighting over it above in memory. Okay. But these two pieces together are the keys to doing successful fragmentation, without a doubt. When we used to teach the Master Series, and you'll see some of the slides from this actually, we used to go overboard. Jeff Berger and I used to go overboard talking about knowing the data and knowing the queries. Matter of fact, I decided to throw a slide in to make the point yet again. And I'd be proud of anybody that notices the two references here. The night, right? Do you know thy queries? Do you know thy data? The other reference is the first requirement. No, there must be two requirements. Does anybody recognize this analogy? I was afraid that might happen. I won't waste your time. All right, anyway. The point is, remember this slide. That's why I have such a big piece of clip art. You got to know the data. You got to know the query. If you do not, is it just a shot in the dark? Well, yeah. I mean, it really is, and that's okay. All right. By the way, I did not take the time to cover the idea of using RAID, using logical volume managers, whatever it might be, and that question will come up at the end. I'm okay with that. About if I'm doing RAID, am I able to see what devices I'm sitting on, et cetera? So maybe we'll talk about that in the Q&A. But again, the warning is don't wander into it lightly. The more complex the environment, typically the more homework you have to go into. How many have ever used XPS? Setup time was not real fast, eh? Number of months, whatever it might be, there was a lot of work to do. XPS was very heavy duty on the fragmentation / PDQ side. I remember my buddy Dan Gioppo, some of you remember Dan. He used to say it's a 12 to 18 month turnaround time. That seems like a long window, but the point is, to do a good XPS environment in most cases, it takes a long time to set it up. Alright, to set it up well, to understand the nature of the queries, the nature of the data, it's very much a hardware solution as well. Well, the fact that XPS is based very much on our fragmentation technology, that should drive home the point again that it does take time to do a good setup. All right. A couple of light points. Fragmentation and extents. As much as disk is really cheap now and you have more than you know what to do with, in a lot of cases, be real careful with this little guy. You create a table, you fragment it by expression, notice what's in red. Extent size 12 something something something. Whoa, typo. Anybody see it? Okay, it was late. For those of you on the call, what's there in the red is what? Not 12 meg, but 120 meg. I apologize. So yeah, each initial extent is 120 meg, not 12 meg, according to the slide. If you forget that, let me do it this way. Each one of these fragments to us is what? An individual table, an individual partition, an individual structure. That's why it's going to get that. It's not going to divide the 120 meg by 3. Each one of those is going to get that. So if you, let's play this game a little bit. If you intended it for it to be 12 meg, okay, and you put 120 meg, the only real downside is what? One, you may not get that much extent space, or maybe you'll get 120 for each, and you have some extra space. Most of you don't complain too much about having extra space, but anyway. All right, so again, sorry for the typo, but here we go. Be careful on the extents. Remember, when you fragment three ways, to your applications, it's what? How many tables? It's one logical table. When you fragment your table, do you have to change your application? You do not. That's one of the beauties of it. But to us, under the covers, it's three table spaces, whatever. It's really what this is here. I forgot this slide was coming. The application view is one logical table. Okay, 3 DB spaces, for example. I think it's really important what's right below the DB spaces there. Table space equals fragment equals partition. It depends on who you talk to as to what we call these things, all right? Internally, we call them table spaces a lot, all right? Conversationally, we call them partitions. In some of the functional specs, we call them partitions. Even in version 10, which has a new feature I'll show you in a minute, we also call it a partition. So again, I somewhat apologize for the same idea behind three terms, but that's the way it goes. Those things, by the way, are identified by what? A table space is identified by table space num and many onset outputs, fragment ID, part num, which you've seen plenty, okay? Again, part num comes from partition number. So keep this in mind. I think this slide is very important for you to remember. Some fun facts on this. Each of these fragments has its own partition page in the table space of that DB space. What does all that mean? How many have ever done an on-check PT? Probably a lot of you. You're actually reading from that partition page, all things equal. All right? You look at the partition structure, and you see number of keys, et cetera, maximum row size, blah, 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 whatever, and then you see the extent list. That's essentially reading from that page that keeps track of that table or that structure. If you have a DB space, one of the first structures in that DB space is the table space, table space. It's a table that keeps track of table. No, it's a table that keeps track of table spaces, which could be any kind of fragment for that matter. Okay, why did I bring that up? The little indented bullet here. Each fragment can hit max extents or max table size. So what's the point of that? How many have ever hit maximum table size? Anyone? Okay. You have a couple choices there. You can prune that table, obviously get rid of some stuff you don't need, or you can fragment it, because if you fragment by three, you're going to have what? Three times the max. Now, let me make sure there's something real clear. If you've hit the maximum table size and you very quickly fragment it, maybe you fragment it by round robin. Are you trying to get performance at that point? Not at all. You're just trying to allow the table to grow, right, past that maximum size. By the way, the max table size, even in 10, with configurable page size, all that stuff is still the same. It's still the same limit. And I've had three clients last year that hit that maximum table size. So if you've hit that, it's something to keep in mind that you might have to fragment, at least for now, until you can do whatever you do, whether it's from a pruning data point of view or otherwise, to make sure that table can grow. The part num in sys tables, by the way, will be zero. You have to look in sys fragments to pull the part num, etc. So once you start fragmenting, either explicitly or just taking the default detaxed index, it's going to drop, for example, the part num to a lower level of granularity. So some of the tracking you've done, some of the scripts you've written to query sys tables, all right, they may not run as well as they used to because things have been pushed down to a lower level. Okay, if you're moving from 7 to 9, and you rebuild that table and rebuild that index, if the index before was attached, now it's going to be detached. I should say 9.2. It's going to be detached, right? And so it's going to become a fragment. So be real open-minded. Those of you moving from 7 to 9.4, the changes are dramatic, okay, architecturally, in a number of ways. There were a number of changes that happened in 9, 9.1, 9.2, etc. But again, be really open-minded and give yourself time to realize there's going to be a lot of changes under the covers. Here's a V10 enhancement that you might find interesting. Pre-10, you could only have one fragment per table in a single DB space. You've seen that over there on the upper right. On the bottom of slide 22, 10.0 and beyond allows you to have multiple fragments per table in a single DB space. Notice we've got a new keyword right there. You fragment by expression, partition part 1, partition part 2. That's it. It's a very simple syntax, but you have to give it a name because we have to have a way to identify it. I threw this in, and I don't know if I should or not. We have discussed a feature maybe coming up. Notice I said VNext plus. That gives me a little bit of safety. Of what I call it automatic partitioning. In other words, you hit that table max. All right. We can go ahead and fragment that table for you within that same DB space. And again, it's still one of those open for discussion. I have no idea whether it's going to make what release. I don't care. It's something we're thinking about doing. Because we know there are still some maintenance tasks out there that you have to wrestle with. One is what? My table's hit the max size. What do I do? Maybe it'd be nice if we did it for you. Okay? Maybe it'd be nice if we allowed you to tell us it's okay to do it for you. If you know what I mean. With some kind of a switch or some kind of a hook. So keep that in mind. Okay, so let's keep moving. Fragmentation objectives. When people ask me about fragmentation, I always wanted this one slide that showed the objectives. And this is one that took me a little while to put together because I can say parallelism and elimination are both, and then I have to start going to a whiteboard and draw. That's why I put this slide together. Okay? It's pretty busy. It's okay. The very top one, parallelism. A situation where, in this case, I'm saying scan threads. All the fragments get scanned in parallel. Okay? Notice, I've got an asterisk there. Inserts, updates, selects can also be done in parallel. Again, that word scan thread comes around a lot. That's one objective. Again, if you fragment by round robin, that's what you will get. Okay? If we need to go scan that table, we're going to scan them all in parallel. How can you tell, by the way, that you have scanned all the fragments? Other than it comes back really fast. Maybe. Where do you look? Set explain. Look in set explain. Be real careful when you're looking at the set of display. You'll see serial all, a parallel number of fragments. Semantically, it can be confusing. It can be confusing. You might see the word fragment again in that type of an output, even though you haven't explicitly fragmented your table or your index. The second one is fragment elimination. Unneeded fragments are eliminated, decreasing the scan or insert time, for example, and hopefully reducing disk contention. Again, we only scanned one fragment in that case. So again, we're not tying up the other drives, for example, and we're reducing possibly the disk contention. Now, a little bit of a caveat. I know that a lot of you are in situations where you might have SANs or you might have RAID. And that idea of seeing the drives, I mean, would you agree with me? It's starting to become a little more foggy, all right? I think we're going to reach a point where we don't care. Anybody agree with that? I mean, I hope we get to that point really quickly. I look forward to the day where we're not saying, well, you have to be concerned with these two devices. You don't really know, okay? And I think we're getting there. The disks are much faster. They're much smarter. I got a call the other day, by the way, or an email from a guy that said he actually saw better performance using what versus what. Sorry, I have to do this. No, simpler than that. Using cooked versus raw. He actually saw better performance. And he said, is this normal? I said, no, it's not normal, but does it bother me? It doesn't bother me. Okay, it doesn't bother me a bit because the environments are so different. So historically, the other was true, but history is changing. So, okay, and the last one, you can get both fragment elimination and parallelism. Both goals are achieved, where we might have eliminated a couple of fragments, and then we read the remaining fragments up in parallel. All right. XPS has a couple of other features that even go beyond this, for those of you that use XPS. I hope they make their way back to IDS at some point. We still have this idea, by the way, that IDS is the OLTP engine. I think that's great. But Lester, I think he stepped away. I think all of Lester's data warehouses are on IDS. How many of you have your data warehouses on IDS? This is good for you to know, John. Yeah, look, that's a lot of people, some heavy hitters, too. So that's good to know. So, again, seeing these benefits and trying to possibly bring some of the XPS features back would be very handy. Okay, those are the three objectives that you can get one or more of with using fragmentation and, again, PDQ. A few more details. This is an area I wrestled with as far as how deep do I go into this. And I actually put some of the slides back in the very back section of the presentation because I just knew I wouldn't have time. But I think it's worth talking about elimination and what really happened. This slide is somewhat to whet your interest, to make you more curious, okay, to really encourage you to push deeper into this topic and to try to do some experimentation if you can. We can do elimination when what? In the fetch portion of the insert, update, delete, select, all right, when the SQL statements are optimized. Whether you knew it or not, we've got a nested loop where we're going to pull one row out of a table and fly down through the outer table, fly down through the inner table, okay, to go get the matches of the actual matches on key value. After the key value from the outer table is retrieved, we can do elimination when we're searching the inner table. So the inner table might be fragmented across multiple DB spaces. We can eliminate fragments and just search those fragments that, in fact, what? Match the key values or could potentially match the key values based on distributions for that nested loop join. Syntax, n, equal, all those things match like. We can do it there as well. Range expressions typically have the rumor that you can't do that with range expressions fight with elimination, but if you combine them, strike that. It's not equal. Slow down, Mark. Upper right. Let me slow down and go back a step. Upper right cannot be done and not equal is null and not null. What I was trying to say is look at the very bottom left of the slide now. If you combine this with range expressions, then we can do elimination in many cases. Sorry. As soon as I said you can't do this with range expressions, I'm thinking that's not right. Okay. Good enough. So this is a hit list and there's another table coming up which I think you've seen before that quantifies that a little more. So be careful because I've had a lot of people that wrestle with, I should have gotten elimination. I should not have been reading that fragment. And either they've used, the expression is incorrect, the conditions are wrong, and this is where I wish I had more syntax examples to show you, but they're actually in the back of this presentation. Here's the table that I was talking about. I'm not going to spend time on this, but this is the one I decided not to dive into. The ones I highlighted are the ones to be concerned about. If you look at the chart, the type of query, range expression, the type of query, the where clause. By the way, there's some notes that I've read over the years that emphasizes more and more. The layout of your data, the nature of the queries, whatever, that's all so important. But when it really gets down to it, the where clause has a huge impact on what you're going to return as a function of the condition in the expression. Okay, and I've got some examples coming up, I think. So the where clause has such impact on what you're trying to do. But the range expression, you notice there's a couple of things, and again, this is covered in the back of the presentation, which I won't get to. Overlapping or non-contiguous fragments on a single column, and non-overlapping fragments on multiple columns. Overlapping really means the values could occur in a couple of different DB spaces based on the way you write the expression. Okay? Contiguous or non-contiguous. Non-contiguous means there's values unaccounted for. So contiguous would be I've got rows 1 through 10, I've got all the values. I've got 10 values, 1 through 10. Okay? Unique. So the point is, keep this close to you when you're trying to figure out a fragmentation scheme and realize that in most cases you're okay except for right there. But I've seen it many times where somebody writes the great expression, the data gets distributed, however it should get distributed, they run the query and it just won't run. It runs fine. No, it runs way too slow. We're not getting the elimination we want. And it's not that it's a wrong query, it's that the expression was off by one, or they had, again, overlapping that took place and ended up with the fragments that could not be eliminated. So when you're working by expression, you can achieve elimination, a great big time saver, especially when you have the 1, the 2, the 3 billion row tables. Who knows if that's the right number for your site? Keep in mind, too, that, again, I just dispelled the myth a while ago about the number of rows being the criteria, and now I brought it up again. All right, all things equal. You can have a great fragmentation scheme and a great knowledge of your data and your queries, but if your box doesn't have enough horsepower, or if you just don't feel real comfortable with PDQ, since PDQ is so clear, right? It's a great feature. It's a great feature, but it has been a little tough over the years to get a handle around. Keep that in mind that when you go to do the elimination, understanding all those things is very important. Okay, I was able to work a picture of the grandbabies in. This is parallelism in the workplace. All right, read down below with me, and then we'll talk about the real stuff. One toy, two grandchildren being entertained in parallel. Okay. Did you notice at the very bottom, elimination in this case is not appropriate. Okay. Elimination is when they have to take a time out, but they're barely 4 months old, by the way. These are my two new grandbabies, born in August. They don't take time outs yet. So, you know, we're almost there, but anyway. But yeah, they're definitely cute, as you can see. All right, on this left-hand side, this objective is parallelism. You could spend hours and hours talking about elimination. Parallelism is much easier to get a hand around and to define. X number of fragments accessed in parallel can cause device contention. I almost didn't put that one in. Okay, again, it really depends on how you look at it. If you need to scan all those rows in parallel, well, okay, you have to access the devices anyway. All right, so that doesn't, I don't like that one as well. Not to mention, a lot of you have engines that the memory is very abundant. All right? We changed the algorithm in 9.4, the way the buffer cache, a little bit of a side topic here, we changed the way the buffer cache handles the caching of pages in 9.4. It's actually a hybrid, a combination between the way DB2 does it and the way IDS does it. Okay, why did I bring all this up? You might have device contention the first time. You might have to access those devices the first time. Once they make it up above, excuse me, into the buffer cache, the way 9.4 handles it, the phrase you want to remember is popular pages stick around longer. That's the best way to handle it. Does anybody remember back in 7.3, we hard-coded the priorities, right? Index pages, memory resident pages got higher preference. A little bit of an aside here that I think is important. For those of you considering moving to 9.4, this is a good reason too. In 7.3, the index pages and memory resident pages had the hard-coded priority. And as the indexes grew, as you guys started creating more indices, as the indexes became wider, why did you have more indices? Because you could, because disk is cheap, all right? It's much cheaper than before. All right, the point is, we saw situations with large clients where index pages dominated the buffer cache. Why? Because they had priority. And so when we'd use an index to go, we'd scan the index of the B tree in the pages in memory, that's cool, that's fast, But then we'd have to go to disk to get the data rows. Okay. What did we do in 9.4? Again, we changed it so popular pages stick around longer. All right. Each checkpoint, we evaluate which pages are the most popular. And depending on their votes, they can get promoted to the high end, which is managed by a DB2 FIFO type look, or they can stay in the low end, which is managed by an LRU. The low end are the candidates for replacement. All right. So without going into all of that, why did I bring that up? The idea that once the data is scanned in, if it's being hit, if it's popular, it could very well, when I say data, I could mean data or indexes. It could very well stay in the cache for a long time. Version 10, by the way, what? You can also have multiple buffer pools. All right, now, I don't want to get, that's a long story. I've got a slide coming up, actually, that talks about that. So multiple buffer pools may help in that way as well. So it really depends on what you're doing, and I hate to use that phrase. By the way, when I say it depends, it really, really means it depends. It's not a brush off or anything else. It really means there's a lot of things I could talk about here, and it really does depend. So, with that said, parallelism, default access scheme for round robin fragmentation we talked about. Fragments cannot be eliminated with round robin. Again, parallelism is not that hard to implement if that's what you want for your larger tables or for a table that you need to access faster. It's fragmentation by expression that is the more challenging of the two. Can anybody back me up on that? How many have done expression-based? Okay. It took you a couple hours, right? Dana, any comments? Only took you a couple hours? Yeah, it took a while. Yeah, very good. Yeah, so a lot of the people in the crowd I've worked with for many, many years, so there's a lot of stories that we could probably share. So, okay. Since we're talking about fragmentation and indexes, we need to clarify a few things. We need to clarify this attached and detached thing. All right. Why? Because a lot of the reading you will do on fragmentation, on whatever, will talk about attached and detached, and I think it's always been a little confusing. So, with that said, fragmentation factor fiction. If you fragment your table data and create an index on that table, it becomes fragmented by default. I should have put a version number in here. Thanks. Okay, let me say this again. If you fragment... I don't need a version number here. Interesting. If you fragment, your table data. I don't need a fragment. Yeah, I do. Yeah. Let's move forward. If you issue a create index without specifying the storage class, the index is fragmented to follow the data. Again, this happens by default in what? Anyone? Which version started this? 9.2, and I apologize. Note, the index pages are not interleaved with the data pages and the table extents. They have their own extents with the appropriate DB space. What I'm going to explain here will help clarify what I seem to be a little confusing there. Some details first. 7.3 and before, default was attached. Data pages are interleaved with index pages. Index fragments always in the same DB space as the data fragments. Index will only point to the data in the table fragments, occupying the same DB space. You've seen these slides if you've been through the master series, this slide here. 9.2, the default is detached. You can't override that. There's an environment variable, which I can't remember what it is, but you make everything still attached. But again, a lot of people have chosen to go forward with the detached. How many got bit with disk space issues when the first time you recreated the index? Anyone? That's good. That's good to know. Hopefully it's because disk is more plentiful and more abundant. But index pages are in their own extent. Okay, this is where the definition for me gets a little goofy. In some of the reference manuals, you'll read that detached means it's in its own DB space. All right? Anybody disagree with that? I like that. Okay. I've always been from the school where detached means in its own extent. Because what are we trying to do? We're trying to separate the index pages and the data pages. It may be in the same DB space. It may be in a separate DB space. Don't know. So, again, I apologize. There's a few of us that follow the detached in their own extent. Some of the reference manuals, some of the training manuals, we'll say one or both, depending on what you're reading. Okay, index fragments can be in the same DB space or a different one. There is some confusion about the meaning of detached. This is a good slide I put together a long time ago, and I just added some colors to it to make it a little more visible. You do a create table, you load the table, you create the index. In version 7, you're going to get this attached index. You know that. The reason I thought it was important to put this up as well is if you're moving from 7 with attached indexes, and again, a lot of you have 7 with detached. If you're moving from 7 with attached to 9, Your on-check PTs are going to look a little different. All right, let me back up a little bit. If I do an on-check PT on this structure right here, on this table, I'm going to get one piece of output, okay? Because they're attached, right? It's going to have strike debt. The first part of the output, you're going to have extend information for the pages that are leads, right? What you're going to see is what I'm wrestling with. Number of keys are going to be, say, for example, one. Okay? The second piece of output is going to have the index information. Y'all with me? When you go and it's detached, you're going to look and it's going to say the number of keys for that table is zero. All right? Then you're going to have an index fragment as well. Number of keys is one there. So you've got to be careful with this. The output from the on-check PT changes. All right? Not to mention the number of rows in the index fragment is always going to say zero, where the number of rows in the table data is going to be the correct number of rows. So the point is you're moving from 7 to 9. And when I say 7 to 9, I mean 9-4. The on-check PT output can be really confusing, so keep that in mind. In 9-2 and beyond, the default behavior is this, all right, where you've got the data extent and the index extent. Does anybody know what the black pages are? Bitmap pages, very good. But again, you've got two different extents. Is this attached or detached? I don't really care. I call it detached, okay, because they're separated. A historical view of detached, you create the table, you load the table, you create an index in some DB space. This is how in version 7 you can have detached indexes, and a lot of you know this already. When I put this slide together a few years ago, we were still trying to clarify what was happening with this whole idea. And this is where you end up with what? The data here, the index here. This happens either in 7 or 9.2 and beyond. Same way with over here. Create table on pload, create index, fragment by whatever. You're going to fragment that index and throw it over into a second DB space. Now, what's the value of these slides? There's nothing real, real complex on these. But when you sit around talking with your other developers, your other DBAs, whatever, about detached, take these two or three slides that show the differences with you, so you can at least be on the same page. I've been on site a few times where I assumed the basic knowledge was there. Okay, I was on site a couple of years ago for 4 or 5 months, and I assumed that they understood why putting a table in its own DB space would not cause multiple extents. Okay, in other words, let's imagine the table is less than 2 gig. Play along for a second. This was version 7.3. They had a lot of interleaving of extents, right? They had a lot of interleaving of their table data, their indexes, whatever it might be. And I just battled and battled with these guys to say, just go ahead and move those active, busy tables that are in trouble with interleaving, take them one at a time over time and move them into their own DB spaces. Just a logical grouping. Plus, you won't get that table interleaving or that table interlemption. That's a new word, by the way. You won't get that interleaving. And they wouldn't do it. And I couldn't figure out why. It was just one of those frustrating things. We finally got into a meeting, and I made that statement again. And my buddy Gary said, I don't understand why that makes a difference. And I said, with all respect, I don't understand why you don't understand. Okay, and we've been buddies for a long time, so it was no big deal. But there's a lot of people in the room. I said, wait a minute, time out. I went to the whiteboard, and I drew the basics of moving the table and what happens with extent allocation. I assume these guys had been to class, right? They had a season pass. But they were so busy for a year, guess what happened? They didn't go to class, season pass expired. They were missing the foundational knowledge is what I'm saying. I don't mean to turn this into such a long tangent. But once I realized what the problem was, then I knew how to stop them from having to rebuild every second or third weekend to clean up extents. You see what I mean? So what I'm saying is that's why I put this definition here together a long time ago, to make sure that when you're talking to your people and doing planning and development, you're at least all talking the same terminology. So, again, sorry for the long story, but I think it's important. And again, index fragmentation, create table, fragment by, load the table, create index. This is where the table data is fragmented, but not the index. The index extents will follow them follow the table data into their own, into the same DB space, but not the same extent. Some of the books will call this attached. I call it detached. All right. With that said, let's look at some examples. Okay, here are the guidelines or strategies. Again, if you've had the master series, you've seen these slides. I'll do them relatively quickly. If you have an attached index on a fragmented table, all right, what this means, again, is you fragmented the table data. The index followed into the same DB spaces. This is where the books call it a text. I call it the text. When might you want to use this? And again, there's about four slides here that would be great for doing discussion amongst your fellow developers. Large tables in either environment, DSS or OLTP. It's good or attractive for index scans in parallel. Key-only lookups, or at least queries that need that index, we can scan that index in parallel first, because we've got not one big B tree, we've got a bunch of little baby B trees, right? Now, when the optimizer looks at the cost of executing a query, the cost back in the day was the I/O plus the CPU times 0.03. I assume we haven't changed that, but anyway, it's whatever it is. The cost, number of pages used, number of levels, number of leads. Okay, those types of things come into play. Imagine one big green B tree versus a little one. In this case, like I said here, we're going to scan in parallel, so it doesn't matter as much. Now, I just shot myself in the foot. I was trying to talk about cost and how smaller B trees will be more attractive. The second bullet's talking about scanning them all, so it doesn't matter. Okay. The next one is what I was really getting into, attractive for index fragment elimination because of smaller B-trees. I just got a little ahead of myself. So again, the B-trees are smaller. The optimizer will say, I don't need fragments 1 and 2, I just need 3, 4, and 5. When I say fragments in this case, I mean what? I mean the index. And so the cost is going to be lower because it's lower number of pages used, number of levels, number of leaves, whatever it might be. And keep in mind, in an OLTP environment, if you're on 7.3, these pages below are hard-coded anyway, so they're probably going to stay up above. In 9.4 and beyond, if they're populars, they're going to stay up above. So keep that in mind. This layout is also attractive for scans on data pages in parallel. If we're returning most of the rows or we're going to do a sequential scan just on the data, we've got the data fragments we can read in parallel. And it might be balanced I/O for index pages and data pages. I think that's way too subjective. Now, detached fragmented index on a non-fragmented table. The table is not fragmented, the index is. OLTP environment with high index rates versus data page hit rates. All right? Key-only lookups, key-only reads. Attractive for the index scans in parallel, index lookups with fragment elimination and smaller B-trees, what's that mean? If we're doing index lookups, we can eliminate the fragments below. We can never eliminate the fragments of the data, unless we just don't need it. We've got one big old honking fragment, so we have to read through it anyway. But what is in these indexes that will make that the scanning of the data faster? Anybody? Pardon me? The row IDs, yeah. The row IDs will put us at least to the page in the slot, all right, and that should help tremendously. And again, if we're eliminating B trees, eliminating some of the fragments on the index, that should be faster as well. It's not attractive for big sequential scans on the data pages, obviously. Okay, a detached index on a fragmented table. The detached index is, the index is one big structure. The data is fragmented. Data warehousing with some selective queries. I love this slide. I actually didn't mean to put this one in. Attractive scans on data pages in parallel, unattractive for index reads because you've got one big index. Here's what a lot of people do. Okay, a lot of people get down to this point. And again, I tried to do some of the fundamentals where I know a lot of the heavy-duty environments are fragmenting both. How many are fragmenting index and data? Okay, very good. Mixed-up environments, OLTP and DSS, and I'm on, I was told to make sure I said which slide I was on. I have to go back. I'm on 39 now, so anyway. Mixed OLTP and DSS environments with data fragmented for data warehousing and index for OLTP. This was an approach that I was at a big client in Colorado Springs years and years ago, where they had just this. They had went ahead and fragmented the data, but they still used index lookups, for example, for their the ones and twosies, okay, the small number of rows returned. You can scan the index in parallel. You can do fragment elimination, scans on the data pages, typically balanced I/O, et cetera. So, again, this type of environment may be applicable to a lot of you. All right, we've got a few more minutes, and again, I apologize for the speed going here. I keep wanting to stop and say, are there any questions, but we'll never get done. Anyway, let me give you some history here. There's about six or seven more slides left. And again, I don't mean to run away from these. I could spend a lot of time on these, but keep these as reference material, I think, to help you understand where you're going with your fragmentation. Historical issues with the B-tree cleaner. All right. In version 7, 7 through 9.3, we had a single bee tree cleaner. Okay, the bee tree cleaner's responsibility was what? To clean the bee tree. What do I mean, clean the bee tree? I always assume this. It means we've logically deleted a row in the index. There's a one-byte delete flag that's out there. We flip from 0 to 1. That's a logical deletion. Eventually, we have to go back and free up that space, hard delete it, so to speak. All right? We have to maintain and clean the bee tree. Now, we only had a single bee tree cleaner. He was never happy in 7.3 through 9.3. The pages that were freed and reused could confuse the bee tree cleaner. Okay, great word, great technical word, confuse. Complex code required to invalidate the request. Now, what that means is, I don't want to get into this too much, but what that means is if, in fact, I've logically deleted something, okay, and there's been a request put in the bee tree cleaner pool, and somebody wanders up and drops that index, that structure. Maybe it's an index on a temporary table. It got dropped automatically. Who knows? We have to invalidate that request so the bee tree cleaner doesn't come back and clean where he shouldn't be cleaning. All right? In early versions of 7, that did happen sometimes, believe it or not, where the bee tree cleaner was so anxious to catch up, he would clean where he shouldn't be. Now, again, that has been fixed in later releases of 7. That should be old news. That's what that means. There was a single list that caused a lot of contention. A single bee tree cleaner can get overwhelmed. No priority in cleaner requests. Long list of blah, blah, blah. The key there is, this is repeated, by the way, the single bee tree cleaner would cause bloated indexes. That's the gist of what this slide's really all about. I bet there's at least one of you that has ever had to rebuild your indexes because they're not running nearly as efficient as they used to. You might want to admit to it. Yeah, just once, right? Okay. The majority reason behind this was the bloated indexes, as we call them. There was really no workaround except for to rebuild that index. Your systems got faster, got more volatile, blah, 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 the bloated indexes. You ended up with an index structure that's this big when it really has usable data that's this big. Okay. Now, with all that said, frequent rebuilds were necessary for efficiency. As your indexes became larger, the idea of being able to rebuild these indexes got to be kind of silly. Not to mention, many of the clients, I'm sure you would agree, don't have nearly as much quiet time as they used to. A lot of you don't have any quiet time. So that's why we had to make some serious architectural changes in version 9.4. Let me show you what we did. We decided we liked the bee tree cleaner code so much, we decided to take it out. We put it in a box, and we put it on John Miller's shelf so he could look at it every day, all right? So we liked it so much we wanted to, you know, put it in the John Miller Museum. All right. The point is, we didn't fix the B-Tree cleaner code. We took it out. We replaced it with B-Tree scanners. B-Tree scanners, you can have one to many. You can add and drop them on the fly. You can tune them. This is a really short slide on this. The workload for cleaning will be prioritized. The index which causes the server to do the most work will be the next index to be cleaned. A lot more intelligence in the cleaning. And again, my topic here is fragmentation and indexing. So I've got to talk about some of the changes that have happened with indexing. I don't think I need to tell you guys you need to build an index on a primary key, or I don't need to tell you those types of things, right? I don't need to go through that list, okay? That's why I decided not to do that. The index will have its leaf level examined looking for deleted items. You can add, delete threads. You can actually influence which algorithm. There's two algorithms that can do the cleaning. You can actually influence which one it will use. And I had one client finally come in that said they did this, and they influenced either to do a range scan or the other one, and it made a significant difference. Now, we don't have a lot of good documentation on B-Tree tuning yet, the scanner tuning yet. It's something that we need to talk about at some point, too, because I get a lot of requests from people. Do you have any good documents on tuning of the B-Tree scanners. And right now, we don't that I know of. And if we do, then I'm not aware. So we're working on that. I just saw John write it down, so that's something we need to think about. All right. Another IDS V10 enhancement is going to change your indexing practice, most likely. Configurable page size. You can now have up to 16K pages in version 10. They're at a DB space level. You can have multiple DB spaces. I'll show you a slide here in just a minute on it. What's the point here is you can have wider indexes now. You can have larger indexes. Does anybody know what the new large index size? Oh, 3,000 bytes. 3,000 bytes, yeah, very good, yeah. They can read, that's good. Wider indexes, expanded Unicode support. We started Unicode support in 9.4, But it was limited because, okay, since all you guys know what the 3,000 byte limit is, what's the maximum before this? What's the maximum before 10? Anybody know? Only one person in last year has known that. I know it is, yeah. Did you all get your ThinkPads, by the way? My ThinkPad's bigger than yours, so anyway. Never mind. I had to do that. I was going to give away a ThinkPad for 390 bytes is what the old max was. Unicode takes twice as much, for example. You couldn't have an index key that would support Unicode much over 100 and much over less than 200 bytes. All right. So in other words, the 3,000 byte limit implemented in version 10 gives you a lot more flexibility on Unicode, not to mention larger indexes. Okay, let's keep going. The online index build. This is an interesting little feature. I'm not going to read through all of this just to save some time. Read the first bullet with me, and that'll probably be good. You have a create drop index online is the new keyword. Allows the creation drop into an index without having an exclusive lock placed on the table during the duration of the index build. Now, what's the objective of this? To allow you to build indexes during busy times because what? You don't have quiet times, okay, for one. You need to get that index in place, all right? I don't see this, and some may disagree, I don't see this as trying to help you with the index rebuild due to an efficiency, because I believe with the 9.4 architecture, you won't have to do those rebuilds as much. I have to give myself a little bit of latitude there. In other words, if the premise was you were having to do rebuilds of indexes because the B-tree cleaner couldn't clean fast enough and you ended up with bloated indexes. We got rid of the B-tree cleaner, put in B-tree scanners that should clean the indexes much faster and much more efficiently. I believe, and I may be going out on a limb, that you will not have to rebuild the indexes just for the efficiencies that you had to in the past. This feature here, again, is encouraging you to be able to build indexes, drop indexes, rebuild indexes when you need to. And again, a lot of you, when you need to, it's a 24/7 shop. I was on site a couple of weeks ago, and they had the 8-to-5 shift, and that was it. 8-to-5 and off on weekends, you know what I mean? And that's very, very rare anymore. Yeah. Yeah, Tammy's thinking, I like that, yeah. So, although you do, what, 2 months off in the summer? So, yeah, and all right. Anyway, I would spend more time on this, but we're a little bit out of time. We're starting to get out of time. But this is a version 10 enhancement that definitely has an impact on your indexes and creation, et cetera, of indexes. New considerations, and we'll wrap up here. I'm seeing a lot of this, okay? The old school, you had a couple of engines or more, two or more engines specific to OLTP or data warehousing. Or you might have different times where you change the onconfig file. I mean, you've all been through that curve. A lot of you that have been around a long time have. Tom, you've been through that curve many years back. You did IDF on punch cards, didn't you? Yeah, never mind. Yeah, paper, yeah, I knew that was coming, yeah. So you used to have this scenario. You used to have this scenario. I'm sure it's still out there. What I'm seeing is down here a lot, where you've got an engine that is just an engine, and I almost didn't put OLTP and data warehousing in there. I almost put just one big engine that does everything. All right. So you're getting more of a hybrid because the resources are now so abundant. Be really careful with some of these things because you've got more power, you've got more footprint, you've got more memory, you've got whatever. Be careful when you there's a slide coming up. Be careful as to how you try to harness this horsepower. Okay. What's new with the queries? The OLTP queries return more rows than before. Sequential scans may be pretty common, or I should say could be more common in OLTP environments because it doesn't look like an OLTP environment anymore. In other words, the tables are getting so large. That's that. More resources required for OLTP. Data warehousing. Many clients are moving their data warehousing to IDS. Okay, and I really encourage you to think about this, especially if you're using XPS. As much as I'm, no cheesiness intended, very sad about what's happening with XPS, okay? Before you consider some solution that is not like XPS, that's more of the informatics solution, consider IDS. Again, IDS has always had the capability of doing data warehousing. Now we've got the ability to harness the resources and the memory footprint, et cetera. In version 10, by the way, did you know you can have shared memory greater than 4 gig for your segments now, whatever the box will allow or your kernel parameters will allow? So you can have a lot of footprint there. Okay, with that said, some warnings, a couple true stories from the road. Watch the data growth as the disk becomes more plentiful. I had a client a couple of Christmases ago that, believe it or not, that's not a typo, by the way. Some of you have heard this. They had 66,000 at stents. The other guy that came in to relieve me, because I had to go somewhere else, I told him this and he didn't believe me. He said, yeah, well, okay, that's fine. He thought the script I put together was goofy, which is possible, okay. But he got in there and he found out it was 66,000 at stents. A year later, they had 55,000 stents. Now they're on 9.4 and they've cleaned up down to about 2,000. Performance is significantly better, not because of the stents as much as because of 9.4. They went from 9.2, by the way. But be careful watching the growth of your tables. If you've got stent issues now, you start growing those tables to 10 times. You start adding more tables without much planning. What's the maximum number of DB spaces you can have now in pre-10? Anyone? Or pre-large chunk? 2047, 2048, we get the first one. Large chunk support, you can now have 32,767 DB spaces. So if you've got extent issues, think about the layout and the configuration before it gets too crazy. Don't congest your engine. Another true story. Had a client that kept buying hardware and kept cranking up the box and the horsepower, and then they tried to infect the engine with 18,000 some odd reports. Okay, it was an OLTP engine. They kept adding to it. Why did I bring these up? Okay. A lot of this has to do with performance, with fragmentation, with indexing. No, it's just general warnings more than anything, okay? And I'm not sure why I thought of these during this pitch, but I thought it was important. All right, a few more slides and we'll be done. Another version 10 benefit, or another look, I'm sorry. I mentioned configurable phase sizes. I want you to see this slide without spending lots of time on it. Notice you're going to have a 2K or a 4K buffer cache, which is the default. The root DB space will go there. If you add another DB space of 2K, it will go there. Okay. 16K, a couple of DB spaces, 8K, 1 DB space. Notice that you've only got 1 DB space per page size that you have configured. Why did I bring all this up? Talking about indexing. Okay. Why could you not have the table data here and have the index here? You see what I mean? Or why not have the index here and the table data there? You can do that separation. Okay. Something to consider. You can trim the page size to something more reasonable. Okay, all kinds of things I could say there. The benefit will allow appropriate cache and page sizing for the large tables and indexes. And I almost didn't use the word large there because the inverse is true as well. I've got a small table that can fit into a 2K DB space. Okay, so keep that in mind. This is a version 10 enhancement, all right? Another enhancement that's going to help you a lot, I think, and I'm not going to spend all the time on this, but external optimizer directives. You've got a lot of queries that are coming in that you wish you could change the behavior of. Maybe you've got a query, and this may be a bit of a stretch, maybe you've got a query that is not performing well and you consider doing fragmentation, but if you can plug a directive into it, then you might not have to. Okay, again, it may be a bit of a stretch. But the point is, if you had a query that you could not modify, in the past you had to let the guy run or run it during a quiet time or whatever it might be. Now you can actually register or associate directives to make the behavior of that query change. Again, I wish I could spend time on this, but I can't. The benefit will allow the influence of canned or closed queries both in OLTP or data warehousing. And again, in OLTP, how many canned queries do you have? Not nearly as many as you might in data warehousing or something like that. So this is a really nice version 10 feature that may help you fragment, or it may even make it so you don't have to sit down and consider that. Another, memory allocation for non-PDQ queries. Again, talking about fragmentation, okay, non-PDQ, this is the inverse of that. For many, many years, we used to tell you guys, if you want to do a parallel index build, do what? Run it with PDQ so you could get more resources, so you could get more memory. Does anybody know? Oh, there it is. I thought it was not on here. Whether you knew it or not, if you send a query down that's expensive, it needs to do a sort or whatever it might be, and it's not marked with PDQ priority, what's the maximum amount of sort memory it gets? 128K. That's not a typo. That seems like very little, does it not? It is very little. We've got a new parameter called DS non-PDQ query mem that allows you to change that, to configure that, to allow more memory for non-PDQ queries. If you don't want to get in the way of the PDQ environment, for example. Be careful with this one, just in the understanding. I think it's a little tricky. Okay? It's one that I haven't had a chance to play with as much as I wanted to. Excuse me. But at first blush, it seems to be interesting to say the least, okay? I think it works fine. I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying that the understanding and the semantics of it to me is a little confusing, so make sure you read up on that. The benefit allow the DBA to give appropriate memory to OLTP queries without doing PDQ, for example. Another one that people like a lot, every once in a while people applaud on this, dynamic OpsComp End. OpsComp End has been set for the engine traditionally over the years, right? And there was a period in version 7 where every point release we used to change what the default was, okay? But you can now use a set environment OpsComp End for a given query. You can set it in the environment as well, okay? But the benefit at the bottom is what? Allow you to have more control over the execution of OLTP and data warehousing queries. The point is, you have a lot more knobs to turn that in the past it might have been the only solution was to sit down and try to ballpark or try to scheme a fragmentation approach, where now you may have more influence over the queries dynamically. That's it. I knew this would come to an abrupt halt. Again, I apologize for the speed. There's a lot of information there. Hopefully this session gave you more perked your interest than anything. And again, if you have questions, send me email. I go in phases about answering emails, so. I'll, when I get on an upswing, I'll answer them. So, yes, question. Can you press your green button if you have a question, please? Thank you.
A few years back, I was in one of your sessions, and you had done an analysis on disk performance in relation to how full the drive was. And I think you came to a threshold of 20-some-odd percent where the graph really went down. I just can't find the slide, and I don't remember what the number was.
Well, I would love to take credit for it, but believe it or not, I don't think it was me.
No, I'm sure. Well,
yeah.
I'm sure it was.
It could have been Jeff Bergeron.
Maybe. I thought it was you. I apologize.
Well, no, it's okay, too. Because send me an email, because I've got, when Jeff left, I've got all of his stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, that was either he or Dan Gioppo. Yeah, and I still talk to those guys, so send me an email, yeah?
Okay, well, thank you.
Sure. Other questions? I know you guys are hungry, so any more questions? Yes, sir. Could you press your mic? Okay.
Yeah, any guidance on the number of B-tree scanners? I know there's no documentation yet, but any guidance on how many we should configure?
No, not yet, because, I mean, I shouldn't even say not yet. I would always say it depends, with all respect, it depends on your environment. Let me tell you, the thing that will help you, though, there's a number of onstats. Okay, here's my advice on that. Make sure you do the reading on the algorithms, and again, I've got that detail if you can't find it. Okay, I've got it in presentations that I hand out. Let me say this much. On my website, there's a version 10 presentation, all right, that also has the B-tree scanner stuff as well and the new buffer cache manager. What I would encourage you to do is this. Go and read through that to get educated on the different algorithms and some of the different features, and then look at some of the nuanced stats. There's a number of nuanced stats that will tell you what's happening, and there's a number of them that are somewhat self-explanatory. And I'm hesitating to say that because there's some that are not. Okay, but again, we don't have any good documentation on that yet that I know of, do we, John? Are we remiss on that, or... Oh, yeah, that's right. You did. Okay. If John gets me that, I'll post it. Okay, so look on my website and I'll post it. I forgot that there was some. Or you guys can hook up and maybe that would be good. But the one thing that I really like is, as well, is there's a number of on stats that give you a lot of information on what it's doing. Okay.
I have just one more. This regarding fragmentation and the sizing of extents.
Yep.
In IDS 10, we noticed that although we typically expect, let's say, we have 10 columns in the table, we're indexing two columns, we expect that to be 20% size in terms of when it's sized for extents and indexes. But it somehow doesn't seem to work that way. Is something different in IDS 10, the way indexes are sized for fragmented tables?
I don't believe we changed that algorithm at all. Okay. The index sizing is, and stop me when I go wrong, if anybody knows. The index sizing has always been proportional to the data size. Wait, we talked about this. We did talk about this.
Could you use your green button? People on the phone can't hear you.
Yes. When you want to size your index, if you have a 100-byte data row, and you're indexing 20 bytes, and it's a detached index, you have to add in another 8 bytes. So it's actually 28%. If it's an attached index, or the other term is semi-attached, where the index is in the same DB space, then it's 4 bytes, so it would be 24%. That sometimes throws people off when they're building indexes just on an integer, which, you know, a serial ID or something like that.
And let me clarify a little bit. I mean, what John said was clear, but the picture is better. Here's a situation where both are fragmented, right? What we have to add to the index rows is the 4-byte fragment ID. The combination of the row ID and the fragment ID together gives uniqueness. The row ID by itself doesn't give uniqueness. Okay, so that's what John's talking about, is an additional 4 bytes for the fragment ID. Okay. The other situation you want to be careful of, in this situation here where the index is fragmented and there's only one data fragment, we don't have that fragment ID. Okay, because it's the data fragment that we have to point to. Now, a lot of people think as soon as you detach the index, you will have that additional 4 bytes. You won't. In this case here. To me, this is not the most common case. Not to mention, if you had this case here and you still think there's 4 bytes, it's just safety. You know what I mean? In other words, if you add 4 bytes to each of these index rows here, it's overhead you don't need, because we don't have a fragment ID to separate the fragments, because there's only one fragment. You see what I mean? So again, if you end up going over, I don't want to say going overboard, you go ahead and err on the side of, well, if the index is detached, there must be a fragment ID. It just costs you a little more disk, that's all. But see, in this scenario here, there will be a fragment ID. In this scenario, there'd be a fragment ID. In this one, there'd be a fragment ID. So again, it's the combination of row ID, as John was saying, and fragment ID together. It's an additional 4 bytes, because the original row ID was 4 bytes. So I heard you say 8 a couple times, so I want to make sure that... Yeah, frag ID plus row ID is 8 bytes. The frag ID is 4 bytes. The row ID is 4 bytes. Yes, sir.
A couple things. Being that you just came up, you said made these up last night, so we don't have copies of those on the particular disk. We'll be able to get a copy of these slides by going
to... Well, yeah, absolutely. Now, what I'll do is I'll post these on my site on the very front, okay, and I can do that tonight. If you were on the Chat with the Labs list, you have it in your email if you haven't.
Okay.
So anybody that was on the Chat with the Labs list for this session has it, but I'll post it on my website, and then you guys can come get it.
Okay, now going back.
We'd like to open the lines for questions from the telephone.
Okay,
operator.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Go, let him finish real quick.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
On the index extension, I think, isn't the formula still, or the algorithm that works on that, is it looks at what your extent size for your data,
mm-hmm.
and based upon that and percent field and so forth, is how many data records I can put in on that particular extent, or that total size, to come up what my extent size will be for my index then. Is that correct, sir?
Well, it is based on the extent size for the data. That I agree with, and it can be very large. It can be very large, especially if you have a text where you've got data pages, index pages. We do the index extent very large, which you don't even need. Okay, so yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, and this last thing is that there's instances where, you know, it would be more efficient to have the index and the data jointly
on
there. And you mentioned that there was a parameter that to override that particular parameter. Is that a parameter used for table or global or both?
Well, it'd be for your table data, because what it's doing is it's attaching the index. And it's an environment variable that you set, if I remember right, because somebody stopped me here, what you set before you start the engine, if not for the session. Let's see.
Default attach.
Yeah, default. Is it for the engine or for the session?
Engine.
That's what I thought, yeah, for the engine. I can't remember what it is. I thought there was more to it than that, but that's the... It's one of those things you can look up, and it should be out there. Carolyn?
Operator, are there questions on the line, please? Thank you to our phone audience. If you do wish to signal for a question, you may do so by pressing the star key, followed by the digit 1. Once again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone to signal for any questions. And if you are using a speakerphone today, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signals to reach our equipment. Star 1 for any questions. And we'll go first to Jim Fannin.
Yes, I work with the U.S. courts. We're still on version 732 UC4. We'll be stuck there for another year or two. Question is, we use RAID 5 configurations for our data DB spaces. Is there any great benefit to doing fragmentation, we're using RAID 5.
This is it's a real common question that comes up, and I still think there is benefit. Is it easier to measure? Is it easier to plan because you have RAID? The answer to that is no. If you're doing fragmentation, you certainly will get more resources thrown at the scanning of the table, for example. If you fragment across multiple DB spaces, you will end up with multiple scan threads, typically one per DB space. The concern, which is probably the heart of the question, is if I end up with those fragments all on the same device, do I really have a benefit? Most of the devices can handle more than one scan thread at a time, okay, nowadays. You've got smart caches, et cetera. So let me back up the question a little bit. Is it possible to end up not having as much benefit when you're doing RAID because you end up with all of your fragments on the same device? That is possible, okay? Is it likely? Can't answer that. Will you get more resources thrown at the query and thrown at the scan because you have done fragmentation? All things equal, yes. So I actually answered the question two different ways, so I hope that makes sense.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Once again, as a reminder to our phone audience, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone to signal for any questions. Star 1 for any questions. And we have no questions standing by at this time.
Okay, any more questions from the live people? Any more questions from the crowd? All right, I know you guys are anxious for lunch, so I'll be around today and tomorrow, so feel free to find me if you need any help, and thanks for coming.
No problem.
Okay, Millicent?
Yes, ma'am.
So I guess you can, I don't know if Carolyn's going to be stay on or not.
Okay. One moment.
Sure.